Hey there, I'm Lindsay Dibben, and I'm passionate about everything marketing, productivity, and career growth. With over 17 years of experience in the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, I know firsthand the ins and the outs of this exciting field. From my early days as a marketing coordinator to becoming an award-winning marketing professional and firm principal, I've learned the ropes through countless late nights and challenging deadlines. Now, I'm thrilled to bring you the AEC Marketing Strategies Podcast. Here, I'll be sharing simple yet powerful step-by-step marketing strategies that you can implement to achieve the same level of success. Consider me your go-to marketing mentor, someone who truly gets the unique challenges you face in the AEC industry. Whether you're an AEC marketing pro or industry newbie, this podcast is your personal coffee date with your marketing bestie. Together, we'll navigate the ever-changing landscape of online marketing and digital trends, ensuring you stay ahead of the curve. If you're ready to unlock the marketing secrets they never taught you in college and tailor them specifically to the AEC industry, then you're in the right place. Now, let's get started. Okay, welcome to AEC Marketing Strategies, the show that brings you the latest insights and expert advice on marketing in the AEC industry. I'm your host, Lindsay Dibben, and today we're diving deep into the world of annual business planning. And at the time that this episode airs, we will be well into the second half of 2023, and that usually means annual business planning, BD planning, marketing planning, et cetera, begins a lot for our firms. And now I know when it comes to this type of planning, there's often a lot of confusion and overwhelm. And that's why I've invited a true expert in the field to shed some light on the process and offer some actionable strategies and steps to make it a little clearer for you and a little bit more accessible. So please welcome our guest today. She's joining for her second appearance on the show, Sarah Kennard, the head of Flamingo at the Flamingo Project. And if you want to learn a little bit more about Sarah, she was previously on episode 16. So go back and listen to that episode to learn about her career path and her history working in the industry. But today we're just going to get right into it and talk about annual business planning. So hi, Sarah. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Lindsay. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We always have great conversations. So everybody listening is going to be in for a real treat. So are you ready to just dive into today's topic?
Absolutely. I love this topic.
So let's start talking about a little bit in your experience working with AEC firms. How does a typical business planning process, what does that look like at a typical AEC firm?
Well, it looks different for a lot of firms. Frequently, it's because business plans get confused with all kinds of other plans, like business development plans, regional targets, strategic plans, marketing plans, plans to open an office. So I like to break down the difference between some of the plans at a high level for people to simplify the purpose of each plan, because that's really where they seem to get lost, is the purpose.
Our engineers love a good plan. They love to put together a good plan.
Ooh, let's have plans for the plan. So a strategic plan is typically your highest level plan. It's a 3 to 5 year plan, depending on how your firm does it. It's where the firm's going to take on big initiatives that further the mission and vision of the company. They may focus on internal systems to get yourself there, innovation to make your firm more competitive, ownership transitions or succession, firm growth plans. And these initiatives that come out of your strategy may be multi-year to get you there.
Yeah.
It may take multiple years for succession or ownership transition. It could take multiple years to establish an office somewhere. They may end up touching your business plan at some point, but they're high-level initiatives, multi-year initiatives.
Okay. Got it.
It's the only multi-year plan. I want to point that out. It's the only multi-year plan. The other plans are broken down into one-year plans to move things forward.
Okay.
So business plans, operational plans, business development plans, marketing plans tend to cover a year. Sometimes we fudge it to 18 months when you've got multiple market sectors and you might have like a federal or a government market sector and your business planning season is actually January. Well, guess what? Half of your federal and public year's over. Yes. So you tend to kind of plan into the next one. Mm-hmm. But that's the only time we fudge that 12-month mark. So with a business plan, right, that's how you're going to feed the business for the next 12 months. If you're organized by sectors, it's a sector business plan. If you're organized by regions, it will be a regional business plan. I get frequently, well, Sarah, we're profit centers as regions, but we do business development as sectors. Fine. There's ways. It's okay. Mm-hmm. There's lots of ways that firms slice and dice themselves. It's all right. How do you go out for business is my question for them, right? How do you go out for business and organize your business plan that way? Because that's how your resources are organized. Mm. If you plan it a different way, you can't mobilize your resources.
Okay.
So got it. What is a business plan, right? I said that it is how you're going to feed the business for the next 12 months. It's really where everybody who's involved in winning and delivering the work get together and talk about what the plan is. It is a communication tool. Okay. Leadership, operations, business development, marketing, and people in the field. Whether that is, if you're in architecture, obviously your architects or your engineers, construction, you'd usually have some superintendents join you. Mm-hmm. You're going to find commonality. You're going to develop initiatives and you're going to set goals together so that everybody understands which direction we're going in for the next 12 months. Why do you need it? You need a roadmap for what you're going to pursue, what you're going to win, the volume of that, the why behind all of it. It allows the company ultimately then to make business decisions because the business plan is going to say, here are our goals, here's our targets. And the firm needs to understand what that sector or that region is going to be able to generate. So they know how much money they can invest in those multi-year initiatives.
Yeah. I love that you phrased it as a communication tool.
Yep.
I mean, I think I kind of knew that, you know, in implementing the plans, because we refer back to the plans, but then starting from that and saying, this is why we're doing this, to use this as a communication tool. I really liked how you kind of framed it that way.
Well, and I think that a common scenario for firms in their business planning cycle is that an office lead or regional lead or sector lead, again, however they're organized, sets a revenue goal. That's where we always seem to start. We set a revenue goal for the next year. Woohoo, we're going to go and then we're going to hit this. And so then the business development team, whether they're seller doers or a business developer, says, okay, so I'm going to go and I'm going to look at the market and I'm going to figure out how we're going to hit that revenue goal. Mm-hmm. And maybe they communicate back to that sector lead or to that regional lead, hey, there's some interesting new opportunity in this market, or there's not going to be as much work as there has historically in this market. So in order for me to fill that, we've got to go find it somewhere else. Sometimes they just make the decision about where they're going to go find it. And then where's marketing in all of it?
I know.
The people who are supposed to help to lay the groundwork for success out in the marketplace. So they're not communicating. And that happens frequently because they're not brought together to do that. Mm-hmm. So these silos will get frustrated with one another being pulled in different directions. BD will feel sometimes like there's an edict. Marketing will feel like there's an edict and, you know, not enough resources in the right places. And so again, it's a communication tool to say, this is where we're all going and this is how we're going to get there.
Yeah. I love it. So you already talked a little bit about maybe a couple of common challenges or roadblocks, but what are some other challenges, roadblocks that our firms face when it comes to creating and implementing these plans?
The first one is the firm doesn't have a vision. We're making plans for the future and we can go in 20 different directions if we don't have a vision. of where we want to be. They haven't said, this is where we want to go. This is who we are. This is who we will be. How can I look for opportunity in a market, right? When we're operating as 20 different profit centers that aren't talking to one another.
Yeah.
They might be talking to them, to one another in meetings all throughout the week, but they're not talking about this.
Yeah. Yeah. they're haggling for resources on their projects.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's what they're doing.
So I had a construction firm who reached out to me to help with their business plans, and they're in regions. Mm-hmm. And we started meeting with the leadership, and I sent a quick message to the leadership that said, hey, can we regroup after this meeting? Because I have some observations. And I'll be honest, one of the interesting things as a consultant that we get to do is look at a CEO and president and say, the reason you don't have consensus and you've got regional directors wanting to start new market sectors, every single one of them, is because they don't know where this company is going. You haven't defined it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been given goals to hit, and they want to hit them. They want to serve the company.
Right. And there's no framework to hit the goals. So they're they're chasing everything.
Exactly.
Because that's how their performance is being judged. That's how they're getting their bonus or their promotion, is meeting the goals.
Yeah. And so if they continued down the process of doing the business plan, so they stopped and said, you're 100% right. We need to do that work. And they did. They did that work. They said, this is where we want to go. This is who we are and who we are not.
Yeah.
Right.
And that makes marketing so much easier too, to come up with a stronger message in all of your marketing and proposals when you have that. So it just trickles down to everything.
Exactly. And so, you know, what happened then was they picked up the business plans and they wrote their business plans. If they had kept moving forward, each one of those regions would have written a business plan, brought it up. Every one of them would have said, we want to get into this new sector. Here's the resources we need to do it. We all need 3 new business developers. We all need 2 marketers. We all need to open a new office.
And money.
Exactly. And so then what would happen is, when everybody got together and looked at all those, obviously it would not be able to be achieved, or in 12 months, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll have to be rewritten, re-reviewed, sometimes rewritten again, because we don't have the common direction, and then maybe finally refined. But boy, that process is exhausting. It's expensive. It uses too many resources. So cutting that cycle is making sure we all at least know where we're going.
Mm-hmm. So the vision.
Yeah. Then the second area is that they treat it like a mini strategic plan, and they need multiple years to implement it. In my career in-house, you know, young Sarah, my first business planning process was just like this. I was a supporting actor watching the drama unfold, you know, each region did at least use the same template, but, you know, each section had 3 new strategies, multiple actions, and dipped way outside their purview. You know, they were launching CRMs and accounting practices and starting new service lines.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Again, things that sit at a strategic plan level.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that was abundantly obvious to myself and leadership when that happened was that all of them were saying, these are things we need, almost like a SWOT, real expensive SWOT, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So leadership was able to take that and go, oh, we need to make a strategic plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. They're kind of doing the strategic planning from the ground up in a very inefficient way.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So this is a 12-month plan about how we're going to go, and we're going to feed the business.
Okay. Very simple when you put it like that. Yeah. I think we tend to overcomplicate things.
We
as humans. I don't know, some of us. And you bring us back. You're like, okay, it just whatever you need to feed the business for the next 12 months.
Uh-huh.
So to meet your goals. So, okay. So like we said, we overcomplicate things, which makes it overwhelming. And like you talked about, you know, young Sarah, you know, just kind of observing it. You've led them. Same thing. I've observed it as a part of a larger firm, as like an office in a region, and then leading them at firm-wide for multiple market sectors. And it can be overwhelming, especially like when I walked into my last firm and we had six market sectors. So we had six plans, but we did have a strategic plan. So like I was kind of walking into, we got it, that it was 12 months. It was really overwhelming. So how do you simplify it or demystify it or make it more accessible for your clients?
The good news is there are a lot of components of a business plan that you're already doing. So again, this is more about communicating together. So instead of looking at it as this is an extra step or an extra layer, look at it as integrating some practices you're already doing. Okay. So the outline is really simple. It's seven sections, an executive summary, which naturally you write last, even though it's the first part because it's the summary.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is what is the market opportunity or industry analysis, right? The third part, which is some sneaky part, is within the market opportunity, what are the target projects we're going to go win?
Mm-hmm.
What is our SWOT to do that? And now that we've done that, what is our BD plan? What are the marketing initiatives to support all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And what are our targets and goals? So again, typically you're handed a revenue goal. So that's done for you.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about
now you got to backfill the rest of the plan, right, to make sure that you can
exactly
get
it. Usually you've identified which clients you're going to go and pursue work with.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing can sometimes, depending on where marketing sits in the organization, be left out entirely, or the marketing plans are really just more about brand level and not necessarily pursuit and market specific.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I would argue, though, that even at the brand level, marketing needs to know what the vision is and which markets you're pursuing, because that is part of your brand. So
exactly.
I just wanted to emphasize that.
Absolutely. Well, and so again, there are these components that are being authored in some way or another already,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not as informed as they could. And mm-hmm. so the marketing and the BD plans are an example of that. So really, I think the areas that sometimes firms aren't looking at, or they're just using history to inform, is mm-hmm. that market opportunity and industry analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And they get overwhelmed. And remember, I'm a market researcher, so this part is not overwhelming for me. But frequently, people are looking for something more than they need for this section.
Okay. Yeah.
The goal of that section is to understand, if we're talking about a sector,
okay,
is this sector growing, declining, or staying flat, and why?
Mm-hmm.
That's all you're answering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you're already in the sector, right, that's the question you're asking yourself.
Yeah. And it should be relatively easy if you're already working in it.
Right.
To kind of get that gauge and then maybe do some gut checks with some conversations with some clients
mm-hmm.
or some research on their programs.
Right. If you're in commercial markets, you just pick up the phone, you call your contact at JLL or CBRE or one of the brokerage houses, grab some of their reports that they publish. Is it increasing, decreasing, staying flat? If it's staying flat, make sure your goal did not increase. If it's decreasing, make sure your goal didn't increase, because you're going to have a conversation with leadership about how you're going to fill that. And then, of course, if you're in public markets, you need to look at some funding forecasts for the exact same reason. So it just helps you to understand if those future goals can increase. And if they can't, then it brings up, again, communication about how are we going to fill it.
Yep. Yeah. And if you want, if you're listening to this and you want a little bit more detail about market research, particularly Sarah's approach, go back and listen to her episode 16, because it's all about how to conduct market research. So right. That episode is a very good complimentary episode, supplemental episode to this one. So
absolutely.
It's funny how you do that.
It is funny how I do that. Very consistent.
So let me recap those seven sections. I took notes, so this is a test for me. on my note-taking. The seven sections are the executive summary that you write last, market opportunity. There was another name, slash something, but mark. Section two, market opportunity, industry analysis. Number three, my favorite section, targeted projects. Number four, the SWOT. Number five, your business development plan. Number six, your marketing initiatives. And then seven, your targets and goals. Mm-hmm. How did I do?
You did great. I want to talk about the target project because this is not something firms do.
I know.
And it's my sneak attack. Why is it my sneak attack? Because I'm also building a go, no go at the same time.
I know. At my last firm, we called them must wins. Mm-hmm. And I gave those must wins to my marketing coordinators for each market sector. And I said, here's your priority for the year. If anything else comes back or comes up and it's not on this list, it needs to be approved by me, the market sector director, and the CEO.
Right.
So if a PM wanted to go to all of us to get it approved, they were that passionate about that project, then that was the process.
That's right. So what's included in that, right, is the scope, what services you're going to provide, a general size measurement. It could be in square footage. It could be complexity. It just depends. It depends on what you do, of course. Any contractual considerations, location is another. So an example of this playing out, a construction firm client, one of their target projects. I do not recommend doing any more than three target project types in a plan. Then we're getting way too complicated, right? So one of theirs was that it needed to be over a certain dollar. They were a construction firm, over a certain dollar amount, CM at risk, within 60 miles of their office for their public sector. Any new clients had to have growing populations. Mm-hmm. So a week after we did this, we were still finalizing the graphics on the business plans. Yeah. And RFP came in with one of those target clients, new clients. And so they ran through all of the filters and the project did not make it.
Nice.
The client was a target, but the project didn't make.
It didn't meet the criteria.
Because it was 80 miles. Mm. That was the thing that killed it. It was 80 miles. It's a new client. And 60 miles is what they felt comfortable in terms of service for their client experience.
Mm-hmm. So you do targeted projects and with criteria. We used to do actual like either named projects or we had like a lot of IDIQ. So we'd say like 5 million from this contract and 3 million from this contract to help focus. I like your approach too. If firms, because we knew about projects years in advance, so we could kind of know like and plan out, okay, in 2023, we're going to have this in 2024. So we could actually name the projects or at least, you know, this size project from this client this year. But I like your approach too. If people don't have, especially if you work with a lot of private sector clients, I feel like, you know, they have work, but you might not know exactly the project, but you can do that criteria. Like it has to be with one of our core clients or, you know, our key clients or whatever you call your A-level clients. Mm-hmm. And it has to be this size and it has to fit this criteria. Because I know whenever we talk to marketers or proposal managers, go, no go is like the biggest issue with the workload, with proposal workload. And then this really just starts it at the business planning level. It starts it before the year even begins.
It does. And it also allows us to create layered goals, which I'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
When you are mentioning named opportunities, I like to put those in the business development plans.
Okay. Okay.
That these are the named opportunities that we're pursuing.
Okay. We had them in the must wins section, which was those named, but then we would have like our core and key clients, like these are the people we were targeting, but it's the same thing, just organized different.
Exactly.
But the key was we were all on the same page. Mm-hmm. Like you said, a communication. We developed it together.
Exactly.
The market sector leaders, the business developers, marketing, the operations folks.
Right. So, well, and what that does again is a communication tool. So BD is not going to go out. If we said in this market sector, we are not good at these job order delivery, just to stay back with construction. Mm-hmm. We're not good at it. It's not where we excel. Either we don't feel like we're able to give the right service, or we don't have the right margins, or we don't have the right workforce. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So BD is not going to sell that, and marketing is not going to promote us for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that really makes everybody's jobs easier, because like, it's just, you know, the business developers can just qualify projects right then and there and like stop wasting their time and the client's mm-hmm. time and just keep moving on too. Yeah. So I think that really helps everybody with that clarity mm-hmm. too, with just working more efficiently.
So. And then that last section of goals and targets, I think, is the other area that most firms say, here's the revenue goal and move on. And success can be felt there with just the revenue goal, or you can set your teams up for that heart sinking feeling every time goals are brought up, because that revenue goal isn't broken down into other goals. And that revenue goal sits in front of you for the whole year, and hopefully you're chewing at it a little bit. You just don't feel successful a lot of the time when you do that to yourself.
Yeah, it's really big. Really big. So can you share, maybe with the revenue goals or with this construction firm or something else, a success story or a specific example of one of your AEC firms that has benefited from using this approach to business planning that you've described so far in this episode?
Most of my stories are really around those goals, because at the end of the day, that's where we feel success. It's where we measure success. We won that project. Now we get to do that project. Isn't this so exciting? It's what we're all here for, is to do cool and neat things. So really finding ways for the team to feel success is my goal in doing these business plans. I don't know if layer is the right word, but I like to layer goals. So you've got your big revenue goal, but you've defined a couple of project types that you want to win. So how many of project A, let's assume project A is a large project. How many large project A's do we need to win to feed the business, to keep our people employed over the course of the year within our identified targets? How many of B do we need to win? In our industry analysis, did we learn that in the past, we have been successful winning 5 project A's, but there's not going to be 5 project A's. So we've got to double down on project B's this year. And so what that also means is maybe it isn't the most sexy project we're going to win. And so we also need to communicate that out to the project teams so they understand what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so they can celebrate when we win it, because they know that we need to win it.
Yeah.
Is there anything in our backlog that's letting us know that we've got 2 project teams rolling off a project A type in the 3rd quarter? So we really have to, and depending on our market types, in the 1st or 2nd quarter, win a couple of project A's, because that gives us great focus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we have those, you know, quarterly check-ins or whatever your rhythm is, we've layered areas where you're going to hit a success point. People are going to feel successful because you want a project A, you want a project B. You might have other company goals, like minority goals, minority firm, you know, engagement, or you could have firm-wide goals around profitability on a project too that you want to add in here. So again, you have all of these opportunities to celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah.
To celebrate one another's efforts.
They're kind of like checkpoints or, and it's just like any type of goal setting. So whether you're goal setting for your own personal, like I want to run a marathon in November, you know, and I'm going to break it down because that's the end goal, but I need to do so much more and I need to celebrate along the way because that's a long training program. By the way, I'm not running a marathon and I'm just using that as an example, but to have run half marathons in the past, and the training is grueling, and it is like it's almost a half a year. And so you have to, like, when we hit the first 5 miles, when we hit the first 10 miles in our training, we have to celebrate. And so I think breaking these down, and I like what you said, quarterly review, that's part of the implementation, is going back and reviewing and celebrating successes and evaluating what's working and what's not. And we could probably do a whole nother episode on like implementing the plan.
We could.
But
you brought up one of the important aspects is it's reflecting on what we've learned. Because the only plans that are successful are the ones that live and breathe.
Yeah.
Things happen. Good Lord. We know that. Things change. Change is constant, as I say frequently. Change is constant. So reflecting and going, listen, what we learned is because of what's happening with interest rates is that we're in the commercial market. What's happened with interest rates, project days aren't happening this year. That's what we've learned. That's what we've learned. And we didn't know that before because we didn't know that before. So we've got to make some adjustments. And so either we've got to adjust our goal. We've got to adjust the project types we're going after. We've got to adjust how we're delivering it, right? We've got to adjust. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. What have we learned and what are we going to do about it? And that could be what we learned is that one of our clients ended up going out for a much larger bond than they told us it was going to be. And holy bejesus, we won it. And so we're not going to have a workforce to go do what we thought we were going to go do this year in this sector, but we can't not do anything.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
Yeah. And doing this proactively, like, you know, keeping a pulse on this and, and, you know, consistently doing this, hopefully you're getting out in front of some things. You know, even if it's only like a month or two, you're not blindsided.
Right. Exactly. I mean, a good example, we're in a lot of state legislative processes right now, and I'm in the state of Texas, and we're potentially calling a second session around property taxes. Hey, guys, that's important for our industry. So it's been talked about, you know, for the last 6 months that possibly they're going to cut property taxes, but it didn't happen in session. It might happen now. Well, since it's still kind of up in the air at the moment and firms may be starting their business planning, they may have to also do a couple scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so again, what did we learn in the last quarter? Because now we have the answer.
Yeah. I love it.
So, you know, you just never know.
Yeah. Can you tell us some other, you know, specific outcomes or improvements?
Oh, sure.
That your firms have experienced as a result of this? I know you've mentioned a couple. Obviously, you can't name these people by name, but you've named a couple of scenarios. But can you get any others that you can mention that you can share with us?
Well, I would say that much more strategic working of either a sector, a region with business development and marketing where there's less frustration. And I know that that sounds like a weird measurement. But so frequently, marketing's doing the campaign that they think they need to be doing based on the goals that they were told, when in fact, it's not really the goalpost. So they're frustrated and BD's frustrated because now I need a video and I need a this and I need a that in order to be successful for all of us. And marketing's going, we don't have a video resource. I got to spin this up. I got to find money for it because I thought the path we were going down to capture this work was this. And we're working from behind now.
Yeah.
So that's one of the areas that I've seen great improvement. I've also seen great improvement in the understanding of what one another does. Communication brings so much to bear. It reminds all of us that we're human beings. We're doing our best. We're working towards the same goals. It brings empathy. And it also makes us want each other to succeed. Isn't that amazing? So that's a really, you know, squishy example, but I see it happen a lot.
Yeah.
a lot where marketing is able to take and create goals that all of them see themselves in. They go, yes, that's so exciting. And so marketing doesn't get those really annoying questions about, well, let me see your metrics.
In marketing, I feel like also has a purpose. And well, A, it makes, you mentioned metrics. It makes the metrics so much easier to, you know, if your goal is to expand this market, or, you know, get traffic from this geographic location because that's where you want to expand and open a new office. It's really easy to set up those metrics. Right. But if your metrics is, oh, let's just grow the brand. Well, how? What does that look like?
I want to grow by 5%.
Who do we want to get in front of? What do we want to position ourselves as? Yeah. It's really hard to measure. And the more I talk to marketers, you know, through my content marketing clarity course or just other content marketing trainings that I do, you know, they're always like, well, how do we measure? How do we measure? And I always go back to the goals. They have to be supported. And it's so many of marketers aren't involved or are even given. And I'm like, listen, you don't have to be necessarily be involved in all of the business planning, but you need to know the vision and you need to know the goals for the firm, because that's how marketing can get out in front and help. I always tell them even the strategic goals, because marketing, as we know, sometimes it takes several years. Yep. So especially for a new market, I see that and experience that. And I love, and I also have experienced when we've done this business planning process and we're all on the same page, we are working. I've experienced it. We're all working in the same direction. You know, it just makes work so much more enjoyable just at a person level, like an individual level, but you actually succeed more. Like, you know, it's, you're willing to fight for other people. Okay. I got to stay and work the weekend for this proposal, but I know the reason why we're doing it. Exactly. And I know what it's going to gain. And I'm working with these people and these people are working with me because it's part of their goal as well. So it just creates that camaraderie.
And then for the business developers, it does something really important too, because it gives them, I'm going to call it the cover of when a principal or an office lead comes and says, my alma mater, you know, where I went to high school has a project coming up and I want to pursue it and this or that. It gives you some non-emotional criteria to say, should this be something that we spend time on, you know, usually at that point, something's already come
like out. To bid. Yeah. To even put right? together a bid. Yeah.
And it doesn't
that you haven't even done the pre-proposal work on yet.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean that the answer is going to be no. It gives an unemotional approach to say they were not a target client. Let's remind ourselves why they weren't a target client. And then is the project even something that we've said we want to win? So it gives business development some cover too.
Yeah.
So when business development is out, you know, out
taking
golfing,
the bushes,
right?
I call out it taking golfing, the bushes.
You know, everybody, you know, jokes about or happy hours or whatever it is. And, you know, well, yes. And I was with our top targets. And we were talking about how now they've got three of our project days because of vocabulary too.
Yeah.
Sometimes people like to name the projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost like personas, you know?
Yes. Yes.
So it gives them some, just like with marketing and what's your metrics, it helps business development that way. And it also, when you've got your people out, they go to with a client, right? This happens where you get the table at the thing for the client, their foundation, and you're sitting with them and you're overhearing conversations. You're like, oh, ding, ding, ding. That is something that we said we want to do. And it's within our radius and it's within, I don't know, you know, whatever your criteria is. And you go back to the business developer and go, this needs to get on our list. Mm-hmm. I heard about this X, Y, Z. And so it just, again, it makes it a little bit more formulaic, a rubric, or whatever terminology you like for everyone to contribute. And I've seen it happen over and over again. And I've seen firms be able to move faster towards their goals as well.
Yeah, because you're clear.
Yep.
And everybody's working in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Okay.
Yep.
Well, before I let you go today, I have some rapid fire questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So since you've been on the episode before, I've mixed them up a little bit.
Excellent.
Because you've already answered my standard questions. So question number one is, what is your number one piece of advice for marketers who are new to the annual business planning process?
Listen to the goals, listen to where they want to go and think about that as a marketer. What can I do as a marketer in whatever seat I sit in? You know, if I'm in leadership, maybe it's within the plan itself. If I'm a coordinator, it's I need to know more about XYZ that I just heard. I'm really interested in that. I need to express my interest. Listen so that you have a big understanding of where the company wants to go. I'm a big believer in listen first. So that's why you get that answer. But also, it's important for it to filter through our brains, because our brains ultimately go to how do I communicate this? How do I pursue this? How do I win this? How do I talk about this persuasively? Mm-hmm. And without listening, we can't do that.
Love it. And question number two, what has been your favorite or most memorable win when it comes to the business planning process?
So when the plans are finished, a key component is that all of the leaders who've been putting these plans together is they get together and present them to one another. And just like any peer group meeting, because that's what they are, they're a peer group, they realize they're all doing the same thing. They see how they can work together. They understand where we're investing a little more and why. It opens the channel for all of that constructive communication. Even when firms have great communication about other things.
Yeah.
It says, this is important for us to communicate about as a peer group. It says, this is what's important for us to support one another on. It gives it space and it makes it important, and they work together because they want to. Everybody does. Yeah. So again, it's communication, communication, communication. But that light bulb moment, just like with any peer group, we experience it as marketers when we go to SMPS. We're like, oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one.
They get me.
Yeah, they get me. I thought I was the only one dealing with this. Help me. And it may not even be something within the business plan that they happen to bring up in one of their quarterly meetings, right? It could be something else, but they're peers and they're working towards the same thing, and they're going to run into similar obstacles. And how did you get around this contracting requirement? How did you get around that labor law that seems like it's not helpful for anybody involved?
Yeah.
If you're doing federal work, how are you achieving the Build Back America certification when we're struggling for the suppliers?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just all those, it opens up across silos that have to be made.
Yeah.
For business. We slice and dice it different ways that work for our organization. And sometimes we even change that because it's no longer working. It starts breaking it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my favorite thing, is to watch them realize they're all on the same boat. They just don't realize they're on the same boat.
Okay. And then question number three, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about planning season, which I know most people just cringe. They cringe because it's on top of doing their work every day. I love it because people call me for all kinds of things. As a market researcher, they want information about what's going on in the market to make their plans. They'll call me to help lead planning of various kinds. And I get to learn about them and what makes them special. And it's such a gift to be able to be part of that process. So I love planning season. I am insanely busy and ask myself why I do this, usually annually at Thanksgiving, because I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I love it because it brings so many people together within an organization to plan for the future and to set them up for success. So I'm excited about the season we're going into. I'm not sure how excited my family is.
Yeah. Yeah. On top of like back to school and, you know, all that stuff. The fall is always busy.
It
I think for everybody. I don't know why. So my last question for you today is, if people want to learn more about you or hire you to help them with their plan, how can they get in touch with you?
So my website, theflamingoproject.com, is of course a great place to go. I've got a number of blogs written about market research. I've got a couple of blogs written about business planning. I'll have actually a virtual workshop that I'm going to be launching at the end of the summer to help people lead this process on there as well. Just a lot of resources. My favorite thing is to learn and to share. So I love resources, and that's why I love being able to be on your podcast, because that's something that you're certainly known for. So my website has my contact information. Please reach out to me. If you've got any questions, I love breaking down problems, whether you need me to lead a workshop, to do any of that. It doesn't matter. I love to break down problems. It's something apparently I'm good at.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And she will answer your questions, because I know I've asked her questions. So I will make sure to link up your website and your virtual workshop when it's available in the show notes. So thank you again for coming on the show a second time. And this has been a great conversation. I took lots of notes. And I know our listeners will probably go back and re-listen and take some notes as well. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you. And happy planning, everybody. I hope it's simplified for you all. Like, I like it.
Thank you, Sarah, for joining us today and sharing your expertise on the annual business planning for AEC firms. Your insights have been invaluable, and I hope it has simplified the process for our listeners. As I wrap up this episode of AEC Marketing Strategies, I hope you've gained valuable insights into the world of business planning. Remember, it's not just a mere checklist or research study. It's a communication tool, so all of your departments can get on the same page when it comes to winning work for your firm next year. I encourage you to embrace the process of business planning, involving key stakeholders, and breaking it down into these manageable steps and sections that Sarah talked about today. By incorporating the key elements and strategies that we talked about, you can create a focused and measurable plan that drives your growth and helps you achieve your goals. If you want to learn more about Sarah and her expertise, particularly in business planning, among other things she's good at, make sure to check out the show notes page for this episode over at marketerstakeflight.com/128 for episode 128. And thank you for tuning in to AEC Marketing Strategies. I hope you found this episode informative and inspiring. Stay tuned for my next episode, where I'll continue to bring you expert advice and insights to elevate your AEC marketing game. I'm your host, Lindsay Diven, signing off. Until next time, keep strategizing and thriving in the world of AEC marketing.